and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 419. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me this week, it's the return of the Fox.
Hello. That was rubbish, wasn't it?
No, we're sticking with it. First take, one take Glenn, that's what they call you. So we're running with it. And the also return of Emily Soden.
Hi, I'm not as interesting, but Glenn's entrance seems to get creepier every time.
Yeah, by the end of it, you're just going to exhale heavily. Episode 425 is going to be...
Oh, no. Oh, please.
Usually I do noise reduction on these podcasts, but just for that bit, I'm not going to. I'm going to leave it in so you get every horrible rattle of my larynx.
Yeah.
How is everybody? Everybody all right? It's Friday, guys.
Thank God.
Gonna say, that was not the response, though. We were all over, hey, it's fine. Oh, no, just dead. Just kill me now.
I'm just dead inside. No, it's good. It's good. It's sunny outside. I'm ready for the weekend.
It is sunny outside. I'm delighted because it's been horrible and cold and forever. But no, it's nice. It's fresh, I would say. And I'm sure we've all bought Battlefront 2 and are looking forward to lots of non-cynical play and unlocking Iden Versio the moment you finish the campaign. Right, you guys?
No.
I'm waiting for the tumbleweeds to go across there.
I've already done heavy exhaling. If I have to go... Yeah. As well.
I've decided I'm boycotting loot box games. That's my controversial statement of the podcast.
But Glenn, you work in mobile. This is doomed.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I'm boycotting console loot box games. Because the thing was with mobile, I don't mind...
Hold that.
I have to save this thought. Okay.
Hold these good thoughts, because this is what we're going to be touching on in the next section.
Oh, sorry. I just got way over eager. I've got lots to say.
Yeah, you have lots to say. We're going to be discussing this because, yes, this does dovetail nicely into the mobile world. And for any console gamers listening, we're going to basically run down the next 3 years of your life because we've already lived it. So look forward to that. Along with news about Stardew Valley's latest update, we talk to the developers of Middle-Earth Shadow of War, the mobile version, and the guy behind the Warner Brothers side of things, dealing with the console version too, about how they brought it over onto mobile, plus a ton of new releases. Le Noir, which Yay. Is how you pronounce it, is out on Switch. We've got mobile games as well, including the likes of Ocmo and Blast Rush and, Corporate Salmon. But first, the news. Stardew Valley has been enjoying what I'm going to assume is rollicking success on the Switch, because everyone who's got a Switch won't shut up about it.
Is that aimed at me?
No. Yes. No, because it's just... No, everyone who's got a Switch is just like, I've played Stardew Valley for 20 hours over the weekend. What has happened to my life, lol? That's like every tweet I see from everyone who owns a Switch. So I guess it's done pretty well.
I would say so, considering it's still in number 3 in the charts.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Up against all the other Mario and Nintendo business. Yeah, that's pretty good. It's Farming Life Simulator, in case you're the one person who hasn't played it. It's been out on PC and consoles, and now it's on the Switch, and everybody loves doing it, because now they can take their little shrubbery, or whatever it is you grow in. I've not played it, I don't know.
That was a Monty Python reference. Please tell me that was a Monty Python reference.
No, it wasn't. It was just...
Damn it.
I was looking for a fun word for bush. And you can now take it with you and leave it on the bus and forget about it. And that's great. But new updates are on the way. There's been talk of multiplayer for a while, and that talk still exists, and the fact that it will also be coming to the Switch. That's obviously nice and good news. However, a little tweet there from the folks behind it, Concerned Ape, they've been hinting at additional things, more stuff, new updates, including, and the most important bit of all, you can see it on PG, a big purple boat.
What? It's a love boat.
It could be a love boat. Is that in Stardew Valley? Can you romance your mushrooms?
You can romance people.
Oh, you can? Really?
Yeah. Honest to God, you can.
I thought it was mainly focused on agriculture. I didn't realise it was a life sim thing, too.
No, that's cool. You can find love in the valley.
man. Awesome. All right. So what we've got is apparently it's going to be coming to PC first, and then the console and Switch to follow. They're going to give us a bit more information when the time appears. But yeah, you'll get your multiplayer and you'll get additional fresh stuff as well. So clearly a good investment that Stardew Valley is going to be delivering long term, a long tail, as we'd say in the industry. And then we'd throw up a bit in our mouths for talking industry nonsense. All right. Now, as we've already hinted upon, and as I rudely interrupted Glenn earlier, Battlefront 2 launches today, this very day, as we are talking. And let's say that the road to launch has been slightly rocky. And that's for a number of reasons. The main one being that during the beta, everyone was looking at it and going, hey, there's loot boxes and other what you would consider usually free-to-play style schemes and mechanics in the game that people sort of slightly balked at. Now, we've had loot boxes in other games. You have them in things like Overwatch and, you know, other free-to-play, not other free-to-play games, but other console games as well. And usually on console, these things are cosmetic because you've paid £40 or $60 or whatever for the game, and then you're just getting crates at random and then buying things like, this classic thing is Team Fortress 2 and hats. Like, that was the original money spinner, it feels to me. But after that, it was, you know, cosmetic things and costumes and bits and bobs. Things that don't affect your player's stats. They don't give you an advantage in-game. They just make you look kind of cool. However, with Battlefront 2, it became clear that these loot boxes, which you had to buy with credits, would actually give you perks and boosts that would affect your character directly. Which made some people go, hang on a minute, does that not make this a pay-to-win game? This is a little bit alarming. What are we doing here? And other things like character unlocks, for example, like the, you know, important characters you might want to play, like Luke Skywalker's, are locked behind either an expensive paywall or about 3 months of 24/7 grind. So it's fair to say that it hasn't been met particularly well. Twitter's been angry, Reddit has been angry, which is Reddit's default state. But it's been particularly angry. Famously, they go in and did an AMA, EA did, about the game, and it was the most downvoted thing on Reddit ever, which probably takes some beating. And it's been a bit of a nightmare. And then, was it this morning or last night they announced this, where EA have turned around and gone, we're just removing all premium currency stuff from the game.
I think that was last night, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, there is a but. Go on, do the but.
Well, okay, so I've got a few different thoughts. The one I was going to touch on initially was, like, so you said you can't really boycott all games or loot boxes in it if you're a mobile journalist. And I agree, that's true, but mobile games that have loot boxes in them are free, and they rely on that to sort of get any money out of people. So while I'm not necessarily saying that it's good on mobile, at least you can say that you've got the option. You download the game for free, you don't have to spend money, but if you don't, you're probably not going to get the same, ability as other players, which is kind of fair enough, because they've paid to support the game. But with a console game, so it's like £50 splashed out already for Star Wars Battlefront 2, but then if you're not willing to splash out another £50, or however much it costs to become a powerful character, you've got a disadvantage against other players, which is kind of what you suggested earlier. That's terrible practice, and I'm hoping that's not the future of video games, because that's absolutely terrible. Like, box games are getting way more expensive anyway. Like, £50 is mental to me. I remember when games were like £30 at launch, so they're already getting more expensive, probably mostly due to inflation though, and then people are expected to pay again that price again for either a season pass or these new horrible gambling loot boxy things. Like, it's just not right.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things that you mentioned. Now, the price of games going up and being expensive, I kind of disagree with that. I remember when the N64 came out and the games were £65.
Oh.
The problem that everyone's been complaining about over the years is the reason that things like loot crates exist and free-to-play mechanics exist, or mechanics in games where there's an unlimited cap on how much you can spend. They argue is precisely because games haven't really gone up in price over the last decade or so. They've always been hovering around this £40-ish mark. But the costs of development have massively increased. So the argument is that, well, we have to sell a lot more copies of the game, but there's a point where that plateaus as well, and it's like, we still need to make up the fact that this game has a £80 million budget, and that's obviously not what games used to cost. And so, as a result, they need to find new ways to monetizing, and that's why you've suddenly found this higher tier, where you've had your deluxe game packages, where they do cost like £85 digitally, and they give you a bunch of free stuff and the season pass and all that business. They start to gate additional content behind a much bigger paywall. So that's, I take issue slightly there, but what the core of what you say I agree with, which is the reason that these things exist in mobile games and have done for a while, is that people weren't buying premium as much. And the free-to-play mechanic, what it does is it allows 98% of all people who play the game to play the game completely for free. Because that's the model. And we've talked about it before, but the free-to-play model is, if your game is successful, a good model, a working free-to-play model, means that between 2 and 5% of your audience are spending money. And everyone else never spends a penny. And that's a good, that's a really successful free-to-play game. Everyone gets to play it for free, regardless of if you drop a coin or not, and that's really nice for the 98% of people who aren't that fussed about it having to put it down every half an hour because of timers and that. Whereas the people who spend all the money, the whales, as they're called, you know, the big spenders, can spend thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds, and that allows everyone else to play for free and allows the developers to get some profit back. And that's the model that has been working for people in terms of short-term profit, because there are just people who have more money than they need and are happy to just keep spending it because it doesn't matter, and that is paying for you and me and everyone else who doesn't pay any money to play these games. But as you rightly say, when you've already shelled out £40 and then they start gating content behind paywalls and massive amounts of grind, these are the two worlds colliding, and that's when things start getting a bit weird and icky. I'm not going to lie, it put my hackles up a bit. It's put me right off playing it, and I wanted to get it because this one has a single player campaign, which is the bit I'm interested in.
And I want to support AAA development, because I think it's, you know, equally as important as indie development, because AAA developers are capable of doing a lot more in terms of like pushing graphics forward and creating really technically impressive stuff. But I just don't know, I can't really get behind this gambling thing. This like money drain that they're creating. It took me a while, but I don't really mind season passes and lots of DLC. It's optional. You can potentially get a lot of new content out of it and stuff. It's a good way of making more money, but this is too close to gambling for me.
There's a Belgian commission or something, like the Belgian version of Ofcom or something, is investigating it now, is investigating Battlefront 2 with regards to, is this gambling? Because what you're dealing with, as I understand, is you have to pay your currency, or which you can buy, but you can pay currency in order to get loot boxes, but the loot boxes themselves are a gamble. You don't know what you're going to get. And it's not one of these things where you'll open it and everything will be useful. You'll get several duplicates. So you could end up spending money and then getting something that's useless or that you never wanted. And that's where the element of, like, this is kind of gambling. You're paying actual real money and then you're just rolling the dice and it might be crap. And their argument is, EA's argument, as they stated it, and I'm loosely paraphrasing here, is that, well, it's not gambling because you do always get something for your currency. You're not going to get nothing. You always get something. But the opposing argument to that is like, well, yeah, but I might get three things and I've already got all of them and they're totally useless and I can't do anything with them. Yeah. And then I have to break them down to make more currency, to buy more loot boxes to get. And this is where it gets all cyclical and a bit weird and creepy. Now, Em, you are a like PC gamer. You come from the background of primarily console PC gaming. And you do multiplayer stuff as well. So you've presumably had some experience with games. And I'm thinking of things like StarCraft and Team Fortress and Overwatch and all these games that have like multiplayer elements, but also do have, I mean, for League of Legends and all that stuff, free-to-play aspects of built-in, or certainly cosmetic loot boxes and stuff like that. How have you seen the gradual creep of these features? Has anything like crept into a game that you love and you've gone, oh, really?
Kind of, I suppose. The first time that kind of annoyed me about that was in Deus Ex, you know, the most recent one.
Oh, yeah.
Where they kind of made you, like, pay to unlock the real ending or something. I can't remember exactly. But I kind of think that if you pay premium for a AAA game, that should kind of be it. Unless it's a, I mean, multiplayer, I get it. Like, Overwatch, the loot boxes, you know, my friends always kind of rag each other when, you know, someone gets a higher loot box than the other ones, because I get stuck on freaking purple and silver all the time. Which, of course, are fairly crap ones.
Right.
But I personally don't pay any money into the game, and those ones tend to be more aesthetic, like, you know, your voices and your victory poses and sprays and costumes and things. But when you have to pay to get a better character, which is better than everyone else, as opposed to doing 40 plus hours to unlock that character, that is completely unfair, because I don't have that much money to spend, whereas some millionaire can just boss the game and be instantly wrecking everyone else who can't afford to pay the loot boxes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the very definition of pay to win, when you can buy upgrades and perks for your characters that other people don't have. And that's what they've been sort of struggling with. And it's interesting that it's happened here in this way. It's been creeping in for a while. I think the first big outcry of it was Dead Space 3. That's when people were like, hang on a minute, microtransactions in a console game. And everyone started freaking out. And we, over on mobile, went, hello, welcome to 2014. But it's only going to continue happening, is the thing. Now, EA have turned around and said they're going to they've removed all the transactions from the game, and everyone went, hooray! And then you read down the statement, it's like, because we're going to be tweaking it, and obviously they're coming back.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not gone, guys. They're just making some tweaks, and hopefully they can put them back in a way that doesn't make people quite so cross, but still makes them money. And the thing that always concerns me about this, or the thing I'm never sure about, is how much of it is, look, we genuinely need to start pulling more revenue from these games, because the costs are so high, the expectations are so high, doing everything in 4K and the development costs of these games are far more than they used to be, but the games are still 40 quid, so we need to pull this in or the industry is unsustainable. And how much of it is, yeah, actually, we just want to make it more profitable, and so we're going to claw money out of you any which way we can, and we could not put these in and still survive, but we're doing it because we're greedy. And I don't know, inside EA, I do not know what side of that fence they are on. How much of this is greed, and how much of this is, look, we actually do need to start making more money from this, because that game costs 100 million and we need to recoup it, and not everybody is, for example, Rockstar, where they can spend 5 years developing GTA 5 and they will make their money back on day one, practically. Because everybody in the world buys it, and then they continue to buy it, and it remains in the top 10 for the next 6 years.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. But that's not every game. That's not every game model. I would not mind a return to the slightly, maybe just smaller, make the things less budget, you know, more manageable budget, which means there's less need for this kind of stuff. I would take a cheaper game without any of this nonsense in it. You know, as in a cheaper game in terms of development.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Because the thing is, like, I don't actually have any problem with the loot box and things. Like, if someone wants to pay for, a fun skin or something, it's like Rocket League, isn't it? Anytime they put a new car out or something, you can pay to get the Batman one for a couple of quid or something.
Right.
And, you know, when you explode another car, it goes out with this comic boom that goes across it. And that's good fun.
It's not power-based thing, right? Yeah, as in, it doesn't give you better stats, does it?
Totally aesthetic.
Okay,
also, you could just buy that car outright, right? You don't have to just buy a loot box and maybe get the Batman car.
No, you just buy the car.
Yeah, so that's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with just buying a cosmetic that you want and being able to pay for it and not have to gamble to get it.
Yeah.
And also, the gameplay advantage stuff is when it's a problem. Like, Call of Duty has it as well, by the way. I don't know when it started, but Infinite Warfare certainly had paid advantages, and I know World War II possibly will down the line, but they haven't got any at launch.
Those loot boxes dropping onto Normandy Beach. That was
quite funny.
We're having a moment in games where it's like, God, guys, really? This is, ooh. And they're just going to presumably be looking for whatever the next thing is that's going to make money in the short term. Loot boxes, everyone who pushes back against it, all the developers say, look, we're including these. We don't really want to, but we're including these simply because we need to generate more revenue. And this is one of the ways we found that is successful. It's one of the ways that does generate tons of cash. However much all the people online and commenting on sites and Reddit and everything else complain and get ragey and angry, it doesn't matter, because that 2% of people are still spending tens of thousands of pounds each. So the money's still coming in. It still works. There's no arguing with it, really. The stuff that we are concerned about, I think, from an editorial standpoint, is how you do it in a way that isn't unethical or isn't creepy and isn't certainly, because all of it does use psychological stuff, as all advertising does. It's based around psychology and trying to make you want something you perhaps don't want, or trying to get you into the habit or of something, doing something, a loop of some kind that you start to continue to do without thinking about it. And that's the stuff where it gets a bit insidious and creepy. And I take your point with gambling. Gambling makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm not a gambler. I don't do it. I do think it can be a bit bad, to say the least. And it concerns me that, like, you know, 7-year-olds are going to be playing this. And that's a bit creepy. But then that factors back into the mobile stuff, because 7-year-olds are playing all the mobile games with all the microtransactions and the loot boxes as well. So are they getting... This is games to them. Like, people who come into games now, like, this is what games are. They are a platform with an economy.
Can you turn off loot boxes for kids in these games?
I doubt it. You can turn off their ability to buy them, I guess. Oh, okay. Or do you mean in, like, console games, or do you mean in mobile?
Yeah, well, I know you can in some mobile games, but I was wondering if in console games, like, if because I imagine you can play Battlefront 2 as a kid. There's probably not a lot of blood.
Well, I assume it's the same deal with credit card validation. Like, when it comes to actually paying for something, I'm sure it's tied to an account and they have to validate it, I guess.
So I'd hope they don't even see it, because that'd be horrible. Like, if they're going to beg their parents for loot boxes if they see everyone else getting all this cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's just horrible.
That's what they're counting on. I know, it's a bit grim. But yeah, we touched on it because it genuinely does dovetail into the whole mobile thing. And yes, we've been dealing with this for years, and there's not any clear and easy answer to it until either development costs start going down a bit, to where it becomes affordable that we can just pay £40 for a game and that's it, or they find another way to monetize or pull a bit of extra revenue in from somewhere that isn't based around, in some cases, what we would consider slightly grim and morally dubious mechanics. But we'll keep our eye on it, and we'll see what EA say, because EA obviously put out a lot of mobile games as well where they do this kind of stuff too, and I'm interested to see how other developers react to it. Now, there's been quite such a high-profile shout of horror from the internet. So we'll see if it makes any difference whatsoever, or whether you're all just screaming into the void. Middle-earth Shadow of War has been out on consoles for some time now, and also its mobile counterpart has been available too. I am joined today by Ethan Young, who's the development producer, and John Katz, the publishing producer for Warner Brothers. Ethan, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. And John, hi.
Hello, pleasure to be here.
First of all, I'm curious, the game itself is an action hack-and-slash style game. It's sort of a top-down perspective, which differs from the third-person hack-and-slash action that you'd get on the console version. How did you go about choosing what genre to do and how to make this work? Because, as I'm sure you're aware, when people do mobile tie-ins, you get auto-runners, you get match-3 puzzlers, and a few sort of default genres. Why did you go for this one over those?
You know, back in the original development of Shadow of Mordor, the first console game, we kicked around the idea of trying to do a mobile game companion with that as well. And we weren't really sure what we wanted to do with that. We explored a couple concepts. And the more we did, the more we decided we wanted to focus more on the console game for that one, because we wanted to make sure the Nemesis system, which was its, you know, big feature, had its chance to shine. So we sort of put any sort of mobile plans in the back of our head and said, oh, well, we'll come back to that later once we know that, you know, the original foundation is solid. So when we spun up the sequel, Shadow of War, we again, you know, went back to, you know, our mobile game ideas. And by that time, the mobile market had matured quite a lot. And, you know, there were a whole lot of new genres. There was a lot of cool, interesting stuff being done in the mobile space. So we did a lot of market research, both with what we at Warner Brothers were doing with our other titles, what our competitors were doing both here in the West and in Asia, and market research on the brand itself. What did Lord of the Rings fans, Middle Earth fans, Shadow of Mordor fans want and expect from a mobile game? So we sort of, you know, put all that into a big stew and turned it around and, you know, concepted out on papers a couple different types of games. And, you know, the more that we did, the more we realized that a squad-based RPG was a much closer match to what the console game was doing, but without trying to replicate that experience. That was very important to us. We didn't want to make the mobile version of the console game. We wanted the mobile game to really be its own game and have its own place in the franchise. So that sort of led us to, this squad action RPG, so it could be, very similar and feel like it's part of the same world and a lot of similarities, but its own distinct game.
Well, I think third-person action games in the style of Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War and Uncharted and all that sort of thing, they're quite tricky to get right on touchscreens by using virtual sticks and whatnot. It always feels a little bit on the awkward side. This one, if people haven't played it, is slightly more tactical. As you say, you can control, say a squad of three people. You're double-tapping enemies and everyone will rush in and attack them. You can drag and pull them back from the battle, which is something that I tend to do a lot to try and sort of dodge to get them out of the way, was the technique I found. I played it a bunch during the soft launch period. That was the most time I spent with it. But you mentioned the Nemesis system. Ethan, how did you guys get that as a workable format on mobile? Because it's not the same as it is in the consoles, is it?
Yeah, it's not quite the same. I think that we worked really closely with the console team at Monolith to sort of dive into, what makes the Nemesis system unique, what makes it fun and exciting for players. And it was really important for us when we were developing the game that we replicate that experience. So we took a lot of what they did. And I think one of the cool things that we're really excited about is that all of the orcs are procedurally generated. So they get different traits, different skills, different abilities, different stats. And really the goal there was to create, a unique experience from player to player. We borrowed a lot from the console team, and the Nemesis system was something that we thought was just such an integral part of the Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War series. So we did our best to sort of replicate that on mobile, but there were some concessions that we needed to make in order to sort of make it work.
So what did you have to pull out? Because in many ways, that's what really made the franchise stand out. Certainly the first game, that's what people picked up on, because in other ways, you can look at it and say, well, it's a third-person hack-and-slash game. We've seen this kind of thing before. But that Nemesis system, the idea of the game reacting to what you do and generating enemies and remembering what you do and coming back to you and orcs pointing at you going, you again, and you're like, ah, having this kind of interactive narrative that builds itself was a fascinating thing. So how did you have to compress it? You said you had to make some concessions. What needed to be tweaked to make it work?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously we lose that sort of open world gameplay where, you're encountering these orcs free form as you go. So in mobile, the progression system is obviously a lot more linear. But we incorporated that as well. There are instances where as you're progressing through the campaign, you can be ambushed by these orcs. And sort of some of the approach we took to integrate some of that remembering and that narrative that sort of is driven by the players in Shadow of Mordor, they remember, certain skills that you use. So if you go into a battle and you use fire against these orcs, they'll remember that. When you fight them again, they will remember that, and there'll be dialogue options as a result. So we tried to incorporate a little bit of that. I think the biggest difference is that it's not as free form. You're not wandering the world and you might run into an orc that you ran into before, because mobile it is more linear. But I think as we proceed through development, we're looking at opportunities to sort of expand upon the Nemesis system and introduce more meaningful ways to interact with these orcs, whether it's your own orc army or orcs that you're fighting against.
What was it that you wanted to bring to the franchise that perhaps, would set it apart from the console version? Because obviously there's a lot of things you want to bring in and emulate, but mobile is a very different platform, as you guys have mentioned, and you have to take into account things like much shorter play sessions and perhaps numerous play sessions where you're picking it up for 5 minutes and then just playing real quick and putting it down, and that doesn't lend itself so well perhaps to an open world exploration. So as you mentioned, it's sort of based into, it's much smaller chapters, isn't it?
Yeah, I think one of the key things there actually is the focusing on the social aspect. So it's incredibly important for us as a mobile game to have, very tight social features that players can engage with and participate in and work together towards common goals. So we built out a fellowship system, which is essentially a guild system where players can come together and work together. And that's sort of our focus, you know, moving forward, is to build out new gameplay, new content for players where they can work together to sort of achieve a common goal. So that's something that we really focused on that I think differentiates us a little bit from the console product. We're just very focused on those social features.
Did you consider doing any kind of crossover? Because there have been a lot of apps, and you mentioned a companion app as a possibility for the original game. There's a lot of mobile releases that will tie into the console versions, and you can unlock certain features in the console game by doing certain things with mobile. It's been met with like mixed success in some cases. Did you consider giving that a go, or are there any hidden things you can unlock?
We considered that. That was definitely, you know, in the feature backlog for both teams, actually, you know, the console team and the mobile team. But, you know, pretty early on, we both sides, you know, Monolith and Hugo, decided that if any connection was going to be made, it was going to have to be purposeful. It couldn't feel sort of tacked on. And, you know, we looked at what some other games had done, and we sort of decided that most of the implementations were sort of, you know, also nice to haves of, like, you know, trying to get that synergy of both players. And so, you know, both teams sort of independently decided that they wanted to focus first and foremost on their game and not try to layer on some top of cross connection between the two.
It's finding that balance between it being either a nice reward if you're playing both, but also an inconvenience if you're not. The times that I first picked up on it was, I think, Mass Effect 3, when they were doing that galaxy level thing, and the idea was if you're playing the mobile game, you'd get additional levels in the console game. I happened to be playing it for work anyway, but I think there was an element of me of like, really, do I have to play this as well? All the console game suddenly isn't complete. I have to get everything and play everything, and it felt like it might be more of a chore than a reward. You see what I mean?
Exactly. And, you know, we realized that, you know, we do have some fans that will play both the console and the mobile game, but we have a lot more fans that will only play one or the other. And we didn't necessarily want to force, you know, a mobile player to then have to go and, you know, play the console game to feel like they're getting the most out of the mobile experience, or vice versa.
Whenever we're talking to developers who are putting out like games or free-to-play games which serve as platforms, we were discussing it earlier, how do you get the balance right when it comes to dealing with things like in-app purchases? And we've just seen recently the launch of Battlefront 2, which has caused some degree of controversy over the way that they're using things like loot boxes and in-app payments and all that business. And it's a very fine balance to strike between offering people the option to maybe accelerate their progression a little bit or pick up some cosmetic extras, and feeling like you're kind of crippling the core game for everybody else who just wants to play. How did you find that balance here?
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting challenge. You know, from the outset, we knew that we wanted to be a free-to-play game so that we could get, you know, as little of a barrier as possible for a player, so we could have, you know, a very, you know, anyone who wanted to play the game, as long as they had a mobile device, could come and enjoy the game. And that was very important to us, too, that you didn't have to spend money to enjoy the game. So, you know, a lot of free-to-play games will take a roster of characters, and all the free ones, or the ones that are easy to grind for, are not very good. They're often, you know, fodder characters. And then, you know, the more notable ones that you know and love will be locked behind a pretty hard paywall of, you know, you want that character? Well, you got to spend, you know, $5, $10, $20 to try and get them. You know, we wanted to approach it that we had a roster of both well-known and not well-known champions, but they're all viable. They're all useful. So anyone, even the characters that are a little bit easier to get, maybe to grind for, they're not fodder. If you invest in them, they can be just as powerful as some of the more legendary and harder to get champions. So that was, you know, very important to us, making sure that every character, whether you've heard of them or whether you haven't, you can find a use for and discover what makes them cool.
Hmm. And in terms of the social features, because you're bringing in the ability to interact with other players, this is something that's become, you know, even more prevalent in mobile games than it was, not just in a combative kind of way, but in just those, you know, classic RPGs-like games where you just bring along a friend's ghost or a friend's avatar to do battle with you. What did you implement here, and how tough was it to get that up and running?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, we're still looking at ways to sort of create deeper and meaningful social engagement. So a lot, as you've noted, a lot of the previous, you know, mobile social engagements, like you said, you know, you bring in a friend's character and it's all asynchronous. So we're looking at ways to sort of build on synchronous gameplay where you can, you know, play in real time with your guild members, your fellowship members, and sort of work towards, you know, achieving a common goal there, whether it's, you know, beating a raid boss or whatever it may be.
Sure. Well, that's interesting. We talked to the guys behind Sonic Forces Battle, oh God, I forget the name of it now, Speed Battle, I think, a couple of weeks back. And one of the things that caught me off guard about that game was the fact they had synchronous multiplayer races going on, and that it was sort of working at all was quite impressive to me. We're used to it a bit more with Clash Royale now, being able to see that it works well. But yeah, having struggled with so many games over the years, trying to just stay connected on, I don't know, Modern Combat 5 or something, being a complete nightmare, I can sympathize with the issues, or certainly you can see the evidence of it. But you're obviously trying to bring something in there. You are obviously going to be updating the game for a considerable amount of time. It's already been out for a while. What have you received in terms of feedback? What are the tweaks that you're going to be making based on what the players have told you?
Yeah, another good question. So we actually just released a relatively big update. We released a power-up tournament where in your fellowship you earn rewards. It's a leaderboard for powering up your champions. You get points. So I think, you know, that was a huge success. We saw, you know, really good engagement with the feature. So I think a lot of the feedback we're getting is just anticipation for what's coming next. So we're just trying to get as much gameplay, as much content in the game as we can. And then we also, you know, receive various bits of feedback, whether it's, you know, suggestions about characters' skills or content that they want to see that they may be recognized from the console game. So we're constantly sort of sifting through that feedback and adding things in where we can. But our main focus is just really getting more gameplay out for players, like the tournaments that we just released.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to see what you guys are working on in the future. And thank you both for talking to me today.
Awesome. Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
About this week, let's go to our Switch correspondents for L.A. Noir, which is a brand new game from Rockstar with revolutionary motion capture technology that absolutely does not make it look like you've glued a ping pong ball with a projector on the front, projecting someone's filmed talking face on top of a matchstick man and jiggled him around. That's my review of L.A. Noir. What do you guys think?
10 out of 10. Bravo.
No, I'm being mean, of course. You both got it on your Switches, right?
Or
no,
Glenn. I don't know. Glenn, just Glenn.
You have.
Just the Glennmeister.
Just the Glenn. And you've done the PG review, and yes, presumably you played it first time around, did you?
I didn't, actually.
Oh, kind okay, your first contact. Yeah. Right, so how does this hold up as a first-time experience on the Switch?
Okay, so I've got mixed reviews, right? I gave it a 7 overall, but I think basically, the stuff that's impressive about it still, I think the facial animation stuff, which I haven't really seen in any other games since either, that still kind of holds up. It's kind of nice to see like realistic looking people talking at you with real facial expressions and stuff rather than just dead behind the eyes characters, which is kind of a nice, you know, after playing Skyrim, it's kind of nice to switch over to something with actual faces.
It was a weird trick, though, that one, because the idea is that it's not really facial animation. No. It's just they've filmed the face, and then they've glued that, like, filmed face onto the front of the model. So it's not, I mean, like, the lips are moving a bit and stuff, but mostly it's just, like, project. It's like taking a mannequin dummy, and they've done this in some music videos, and you just have a projector of someone's face on the dummy. That's what it is.
Okay. It's very good. Very well done.
It's because the animation looks so good because it's not animated.
Mm.
It's just film.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, it's still impressive. I still like it.
It is.
I think
it is,
more games could stand to do it. So that's cool. And then there's the rest of the experience. And I don't think it's bad. It hasn't aged well. And I think if they'd made an L.A. Noir 2, I think they would have probably really, really improved on a lot of the weaknesses. So the shooting is bad. which I think everyone universally agreed back then it was bad, and it's certainly not got any better over time. And it's weird because like, I remember playing Red Dead Redemption, and that wasn't the best shooting in the world, but it's somehow worse than that despite coming out after it. But another thing is I kind of like, because I've played Battlefield Hardline since LA Noire, and right. I kind of like the whole, you've got options basically in shootout sections. If you can sneak up on someone, you can arrest them rather than kill them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how I'd choose to be as a real life police officer. But in these shootout sections in LA Noire, my only option is just to kill everybody, like a mass murder. And I don't like that.
It's the 50s, straight up murderings.
Yeah.
That's all they do, hard boiled.
I wanted to hold people up and actually physically arrest them by pressing a button, but no, there's none of that. Just shoot them until they're dead. Even if they're not doing anything, like, even if they're not shooting back, still, that's your only option. Now, the rest of the game is basically just being a detective, which is a nice change of pace for a Rockstar game, to be fair. And it's not like the most involved mechanic in the entire world, but it's still, you know, it's still kind of different and nice to get involved with.
I enjoyed it. That's the stuff that I like, is the investigatory stuff. It is a bit thin, but I enjoy those mechanics anyway. I like wandering around and finding clues and putting things together. That's entertaining.
Yeah, while it's like not the best, I don't think it's the best way they could have done it. It still makes you feel like a detective, and that's something I quite appreciated, because I like games that make you feel like the character. So that's cool. I should say that the Switch stuff they've done, so basically they've allowed you to do all of that stuff now with either motion controls using the Joy-Cons or the touchscreen. And it's rubbish, because it's essentially just doing what you would do with the buttons anyway. So you either swipe or just tilt the Joy-Cons. But that's literally it, and it kind of feels very lazy. And I put in the review that I kind of find it embarrassing that Rockstar saw that as a like something as a selling point for the Switch version, because it's really not. So that's half of the detective stuff. The second half is interviewing witnesses, not just witnesses, like actual... what's the word for people who are under suspects?
Yes.
Witnesses and suspects. Thank you.
You're the best detective.
And that's... Perps, yeah. Yeah, that's the one. And I don't really like that part of it, because I kind of feel
the best bit.
Yeah.
The bit where you have to look and work out whether they're doing bad lying or bad acting. The best bit of the game.
Yeah, I just can't get... I can't get behind it. I just don't like it. Like, I stare at the faces for ages. I look at all my evidence, and I'm just like, the best I can do here is guess. There's two moments where I've been like, okay, I know they're lying because I looked at that thing earlier, and that proves they're lying. Like, there was this moment where she says she hadn't seen a boyfriend for days, but the table was laid out for two for breakfast. So I was like, come on, you're lying to me. And then I used the table with breakfast on it as evidence, and it was a bit like a, you know, Phoenix Wright moment where you're like, objection! Yes. And then she starts crying and breaks down and tells you the truth. And I was like, okay, that's a gameplay mechanic that worked. I've saw evidence of the contrary, I can deny it. But then there's other times where you're just like, so have you ever met so-and-so before? And they're like, no, I've never met him before. And it seems to me like they're being genuine. So I press, oh, good cop. And then I don't press them further on that point. And then I get a bad score for it. And I'm like, but how could I possibly have known? How can I know if they're lying or not? The facial stuff isn't doing enough for me. I'm not an actual, genuine, legit detective. So most of the time, I'm literally just guesswork. Unless I've learned that you don't accuse anyone ever unless you have concrete, watertight evidence.
Yeah, you need the stone-cold evidence. But the rest of it, I mean, that is part of what they're trying to do is say, hey, you know what? Being a detective is quite tough. And sometimes you have to go on intuition and read people.
But where's the grey areas, though? That's the problem I find with it. It's like there's a right and wrong answer in every single questioning bit. If we read a person wrong, which I'm guessing in the real world is also quite feasible, you're not going to get it right every single time. You can't like go down a different track with them and get there in the end anyway. That's it. You've just failed that bit now. And that's all you can do. And that's what I can't really get behind. A lot of the time I was sat there thinking, I kind of wish this was a bit more like... I can't remember the name of this game. James, that game that you said was the best 7 out of 10 you've ever played.
Life is Strange.
Yes, that's the one.
Okay.
I kind of wished it was a bit more like Life is Strange, because in that you had a lot of like questioning people, and you could rewind time. I know you can't do that as a real life person, but it was a nice way of sort of, I don't know, like...
You just want a repeat, you just want a redo. You want to cheese it.
Either redo or... Maybe it's not necessarily wrong that you believed them, but maybe like their second answer after that could then make you suspicious. Like they could look relieved or something, and you can maybe go, oh, I'm going to press them further on that. Like, if there's just a few more, like, sure. layers to it. Because it's a very tough gameplay mechanic to ever get. And you're going to spend most of the experience frustrated because it's really, really hard to... Well, it's really hard to guess what the right answer is.
I agree with you that there is... It's the flawed notion of, like, now you're having to read actors doing acting, trying to act either suspicious or not suspicious. And that's a very difficult thing to read.
Yes, exactly.
And it depends on the skill of the actor. But... Even though that stuff was massively flawed, and I agree with you, like 50% of the time, I was just like, I don't know, what do you reckon? And just guessing. I did still quite enjoy it. The process of deciding, I found entertaining. Like, it was fun, because I played through it with a lot of it with a friend, and we were both just sitting there going, And that bit, like, even if it was completely arbitrary at times, I quite liked that what I was having to do in a computer game was... read the expression on someone's face and try and do empathy to solve a puzzle.
Yeah.
And that is different from the usual... whenever I see a face, I'm usually putting a blaster in it and then pulling the trigger. Hmm. And that's a nice change of pace. So I don't think that they pulled it off quite right. I agree. I think it's a very muddled, weird game.
Yeah. The biggest shame about it is, like, I agree with you. I actually think it is an interesting mechanic, and I enjoyed it just for the pure fact that I was like, it's something different in a Rockstar game or any type of game. And I just feel like if they'd made a sequel, they would have really finessed it, because they had something there.
It's a weird one. I think it had a very troubled development as well, reportedly. Definitely. Lots of issues. But I'd like to see more of that type of game, and I think there's some cool stuff to be done in future with this sort of thing. And L.A. Noire is an interesting relic of it. Like, the germ of something really, really cool is there, even if it wasn't perfectly executed. But... you can get it on your Switch and all the other consoles as well. Relatively cheap, too. I think it's about £25 on consoles. More expensive on Switch, naturally. But you can get that now if you want to. We had Rocket League turn up on Switch as well. Never heard of it. How have you found that, boys and girls? Have you had a go? Anybody?
Yeah,
me and Emmy have been playing it, haven't we?
It's great.
You don't sound so enthused.
Oh, sorry, no, I was stretching, but trying not to do my thing.
Is it the same deal, basically, exactly the same, or are there differences?
The minor major difference is the graphics. Like, you kind of turn it on and it looks like you're playing a very early PS3 game.
Oh, so that much of a downgrade?
It's quite a noticeable downgrade, don't you think, Len? Okay.
Yeah, they've kind of had to go down, because I think they want to keep the 60 frames per second. So that,
well, you kind of have to, though.
Yeah, like, you don't want to give Switch users a disadvantage, do you?
No. If that ran at, like, 30 or whatever your internet connection could do, it'd just be chaotic.
Exactly. I haven't played it on the TV yet, I should say, but so it definitely looks noticeably worse than the PC and console versions, but it still plays the same, and I kind of feel like it's really nice playing it in handheld mode. It just feels like a nice way to play the game. I've been really enjoying it in on the Switch, more so than the PS4, actually, just for the novelty, I think.
Yeah. No, I am, because I did the review of it the other day. And I managed to loop in my partner downstairs on the TV, and we did split screen, and he beat me, obviously, and we had a falling out, but that's okay.
Splendid. Is it still cross-compatible with all the other consoles, or is this just Switch multiplayer?
No, it's completely cross-compatible.
Sweet. Now, that's still
pretty tight.
That's pretty cool, yeah, and as you say, that's why they need to keep that rock-solid frame rate running. That's good. That's really interesting. Like, I still haven't played the damn game, but
blasphemy.
So that's available right now on Switch as well. Let's do some actual mobile stuff quickly before we go, because this is already going to be a slightly longer podcast because of all the chatter. So what have we had this week? Ocmo came out. This is a game we've been following for years, ever since it turned up at one of our big indie pitches, probably 2-3 years ago, I'm going to say. Really interesting, really challenging game where you're controlling basically an eyeball in the middle of a big old mess of tentacles. It's kind of like you're a weird octopus thing with a single eye. And you have to do what is essentially a hookshot mechanic. You're flying your tentacle out, firing it out to grab onto platforms and objects in the world. It's a 2D side-scroller, and you have to swing your way across what is often a poisonous landscape covered in orange goo, which will kill you the moment you touch it. So you need to basically swing onto objects and stuff that are not covered in goo, and often swing through the air, and then quick grab onto the next one, and then keep doing that until you get to the end, where there is a white rabbity looking thing which you then devour in a gory explosion of limbs and blood.
which is one of the best reward mechanics for a game that I've seen in ages. Well done. However, it's really tough. In a good way, but it's really tough. Like, when you watch someone playing it, or you watch it running, you go, oh, I get what this is. So you'll swing, you'll tap on the screen, the cable will disconnect, your tentacle will disconnect, and then when you get near another object, you just tap on the screen again, and it'll fire out and grab it. This is going to be easy. No. No, it's not easy, because you have to tap to remove your tentacle from the object. You then have to tap on the exact spot where you want the tentacle to fire, often while you're flying through the air and the screen is moving, and it has to be in range. And then once it's attached, you have to push and hold to essentially like reel yourself in to shorten the tentacle. And if you're swinging while you're doing it, that might give you some more momentum and you'll start to spin faster. And then you have to press again to disconnect, and then likewise press onto another thing. And then when you land, if you land on a platform or a bit of ground, your creature can walk. So he like scurries across in this really fun looking way. But he's got momentum. So when he lands, he just goes like carries on running because he's been, you know, propelled forward at speed. And if there's a big blob of orange at the end, he's going to run straight into it. So you need to put your finger on the screen above him and hold it to kind of have him slam on the brakes. So there's a lot of... The game says you do not play this with your thumb. You have to play this with your index finger. Because... you can't do it with your thumb. Like, there's not... You won't be able to reach all the bits. You're not going to be able to do it fast enough. Like, you need to be holding it with one hand and tapping, like, wah! Like, relentlessly and quickly and with extreme pinpoint accuracy. But it's really fun, still. It's frustrating, but it's very rewarding when you get it right, because in the end, it becomes like an unbroken run thing. And the stars are awarded for the faster you complete the level. So the idea is you want to get the perfect flow of swing, the swing, jump, swing, crawl, swing, jump, one, bam, land. And once you've nailed that, it's glorious. But getting there is tough. It looks great. It's black on, monochrome backgrounds with a single color in that sort of shadow... was it called? Badlands, sorry, not Shadowland. Badlands style or Limbo style. But I'm really impressed. It's premium. It's £5. $5 is not cheap. And it's hard. So make sure you know what you're going in for. There's a video on OutSpy. And I would recommend it. But with the caveat that you need to know what you're getting. A couple of other things I played quickly before we go. Beat Street, which is a side-scrolling 16-bit style, double dragon-y Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade fighter, which you play with one thumb. So the road that you're wandering across is kind of in the top half of the screen, and leaves your thumb free to tap the bottom. And you're dragging left and right and up and down to control the character's movements. Then as soon as you get near an enemy, you just tap, 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 tap to fight. You can walk up really close to them and they'll grab. Then you can swipe backwards to do a throw, or you can swipe upwards to do a flying kick. And that all actually works really surprisingly well. And this is also fun. Free-to-play game. Looks really nice. Animations are lovely. I'll say that your thumb gets tired quite quickly. Because when you're playing these style arcade games, if you're playing a Double Dragon, you know, you're usually good hammering the button to attack. Bam, 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 bam. And then you'll walk with your other thumb to the next place. And then you'll hammer, hammer, hammer. When you're doing all of it with your thumb constantly, yeah, my thumb got a bit tired.
Oh,
yeah, but it's actually, I think it's very nicely presented, and it feels good. It feels fun, satisfying. Pat, tap, bam, 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 punch, punch. It's very cute seeing you fighting big giant foxes and that in business suits, as you do. It's actually entertaining. It's free to play. There's stuff you can upgrade. I haven't played much of it, but I've picked it up and played 20 minutes. I enjoyed those 20 minutes, so maybe that is worth your time. FIFA Soccer came out. I haven't even looked at this. Glenn, I don't know if you can help me here, but this is the next one.
Yeah, I was surprised to see this, actually. I had no idea they were doing it. Did it drop yesterday?
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, initially there was no pre-warning or anything. It was just like, oh, and here you go.
Is it a full new game, or is it...
No, I think it's the full new game. Like, they said they've rethought it and things like that. It's just, I don't know. These things always look the same to me, so I'm trusting you to tell me.
Oh, is this the one called Just FIFA Soccer?
Yeah, it's just called FIFA Soccer. Oh. It is a proper new thing. The football's actually back. Remember the last time it was just like you were only playing little tiny bits?
Mm-hmm.
And it would let you play like a moment of play or 30 seconds of play and everything. Whereas this one is much more, I think, back with the campaign mode. It's all been overhauled, and apparently like the response to this has been much better than the previous one, going on what I've read and what I've seen. But I haven't played it myself, so...
Yeah, okay, I'll check it out.
Okay, so that's available right now. That's good if you like your soccer business. I mentioned Corporate Salmon primarily because it's got a superb name. And I can tell you what it looks like.
It's a salmon in a jacket.
And it looks like a weird, bouncy... Oh, God, what is this? It's like you're trying to... You know how the joke about salmon swimming upstream, right? It's like that, mm-hmm. only your salmon has a business suit on. Again, we've got another animal wearing smart formal wear. And he's running up an escalator. And he's jumping. So you're tapping to jump and the salmon has to jump. And every time he climbs a bit higher, he's chasing bucks. It looks like a ruthless satire of late capitalism. And it's then you're chased by a bear. And that's Corporate Salmon.
Just like life.
Sounds yeah, fun. Just like life. I haven't played it. I've got no idea. But go and watch the trailer. It's quite funny. That's out at the minute. Shadow Fight 3 appeared. It's a Soul Calibur Street Fighter style brawler, but it's based on doing very specific movements, specific subtle movements, and it's a little bit slower and more precise than other battlers that I played. I was sort of cautiously optimistic about it when I played it in soft launch. I haven't played the finished release, but it is out right now as well. I think that'll do. We've already spent too long here talking about loot crates, but hopefully the news will be a little chirpier next week as we draw closer and closer to the end of the year and new beginnings and doom.
Doom.
The game or just the general thing?
Pick a hand. As always, thank you for listening, everybody. Love you for you to join us. Go and do a like and a subscribe, and we will see you next week for more chatter. Thank you again. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Love you guys.